What's up, everybody? Forged by Fire, episode 15. I got my boy Adam Sosnick here. We got a good show for you today. For those of you guys that are just joining us, what is Forged by Fire? Forged by Fire is a little bit different than a traditional business, entrepreneurial, or success conversation. It's about the hard shit. It's about the difficulties or the pain and getting to the other side of it and being able to tell that story, not just about the ups, but more of the downs. My backstory, I got introduced to entrepreneurship at 18, made my first million at 25, lost it all, made it again, built a company to a couple billion in sales, sold it, bought it back, sold it again. Every peak and valley in that journey that you can imagine, every success and every failure. And, you know, that's why I fell in love with the topic of having great guests on that want to go through the fire and how that forged them to become who they are today. So we're going to talk with Adam Sosnick.
What's up?
A gentleman I met here in Miami.
It's true.
On the courts, on the basketball courts.
On the basketball courts.
We actually met much earlier than that, but it took us a long time to figure that out.
Yes.
And you just have a fantastic brand. You're just a voice of Miami. You're connected to everybody in Miami. You have a great entrepreneurial path through financial literacy, which is different, I would say, than the norm of Miami, which is it's about making money in Miami.
Like make it rain,
make money, and spending make it. Yeah. Where you're like, no, let's keep it, make some more, keep it, make some more, keep it, and figure out how to turn that into a lot more money.
Yes.
It's just, it's such a non-traditional Miami play, but it is actually a traditional wealth play.
Of course.
Tell us your story real quick, and then we're going to dive into the fire.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, brother. We met on the basketball court, and by trade, I guess, if like, what's my expertise? I'm a professional networker. Okay. It took me a while to really realize that, because if we had this conversation maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, I would have said, yeah, I'm in finance, and I talk about financial literacy. But then if I go deeper into my story, every success that I've had is because I have excellent networking skills, because I like to listen more than I talk. I like to ask questions. I like to forge relationships.
And you're very good at it.
Thank you, brother. But yeah, born and raised in Miami, I was always a good athlete. I was always popular. I was always funny. And I was always, even in the early on in my career, the jack of all trades. You know how they say that jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
I was always very good at whatever I did. I was never great at any one thing. And to all the young people or even anybody out listening out there, if you really want to make your money, you have to specialize in one thing. You have to have a skill set.
Fantastic.
A lot
advice.
Of people are basically pitching, you got to have multiple streams of income. How are you going to make all these sources of income? It's like, have one main source of income before you start branching out. So. Yeah. I parlayed all my jack of all trades skills, which was nightlife, stand-up comedy. I was trying to be a sports agent. I was a good in sports. I was a party promoter, a hotel guy, and I gave it all up. And I gave up all the perks that comes with all that and became a cold caller for a startup financial company in Boca, about an hour north of here, left Miami.
How old were you when you said that?
I was 26, okay. About to be 27.
Okay. So,
from 21 after college to 26, it was
fun.
5 years of like, money? Who gives a shit about money?
Yeah.
I want to get paid in drink tickets and laughs and chicks and bottles and fun and whatever. Miami.
Most 44-year-olds are doing.
Exactly. When you make your money, that's kind of when you revisit that. Yeah. Now that I've made money, I'm like, dude, I'm good. I just get like a good night's sleep at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, I paid my dues. I started off as a cold caller. The first time that I ever made, when I started my career in financial sales, the most amount of money that I ever made in my life in a year was $20,000. Okay, like
appointment setting, qualifying.
Yeah. I mean, this was prior to even financial sales.
Oh, prior to.
And then my first year in sales, I made $5,000. But the guy who started the fund was like, "Listen, we're gonna do something big. Bear with it. Grit it out."
That year, not that
five
week.
Grand,
not that month.
In a year, bro. So people were like, "How the hell did you?" I lived on friends' couches. I was like, living in like a back closet of a buddy of a room, like just grinding. But because I knew that there was something bigger.
Yeah.
And then I went on to make my first six figures I ever made. And that turned into 250. And that turned into $500,000. And that turned into like major income. But I've always had the mindset of like, hey, bro, like this could all be gone.
We could be back in the closet. We're back in the closet
soon. So that's, you know, like when you told your story, when you're like, I made my first million 25, I lost it, I started again. The song that came to mind for whatever reason was like the chicken dance. It was like, I put the left foot in, I put the right foot out, I shake it all about, I lose it. I'm like, so it's not easy being an entrepreneur, but like, that's the hustle. Yeah,
I think it's probably because one of my first mentors just like, hey, just sell more. And I was like, all right, well, just spend it all and just sell more, right? And it's probably a really terrible philosophy.
Horrible philosophy.
Terrible philosophy.
It comes down to everything with money. I had to learn this after getting into the financial field. I related to sports. I was a basketball player and a football player in college. You were a baseball player, yep. So you can appreciate this. With money, sports analogy, there's offense, how much money you're making, but also defense, how much you're limiting your expenses, how much you stop spending.
Yeah.
So every year, it's not the team that has the best offense that wins. It's usually the team that has a very solid defense, yeah. And the offense can kind of do it. Like,
bad
there's
boys.
A balance. The Bad Boys, Detroit, our first favorite team. Exactly. So there's that. Yeah. That's money 101.
Right, I was more like the Running Rebels.
UNLV. Larry Johnson. Grandma.
We were just trying to outscore at 150 to 150 to 140.
Yeah. That's like, well, the analogy that I say is like the Phoenix Suns, if you're a basketball fan out there, Steve Nash, two-time MVP, Amari Stoudemire, all those guys. They were the number one offense of literally all time in the NBA. They never won a championship because they'd score 130 a game, but they'd give up 131 to the Spurs, who locked down on defense in the fourth quarter. So offense is great. Don't get me wrong. Make that money, but also save that money.
Yeah. Well, very sound advice. I know you could actually spend a whole hour. We're actually going to spend a few minutes at the back end.
Sure.
I know you have a series of very intelligent wisdoms to share. Tell us what you're up to now in terms of, you had a really cool opportunity, really last year and a half, two years ago.
2 years.
So remember we talked about it here right before.
Yep. I was moving to, I think, Dallas. To
talk to us about what you're up to now.
Sure. So I'm part of a major media network called Valuetainment. So if you've ever heard of it, or Patrick Bet-David, one of the biggest financial influencers out there, he just sold his company, PHP, an insurance financial company, for 300 plus million.
300.
He owned 85% of it, I believe.
So wow.
Just doing basic math, he's probably sitting on $250 million in cash right now. So he's been a friend, a colleague, a mentor that I met in the financial world, in the financial and insurance space. And again, back to my networking, I never did business with him. Just kept in touch because we were friends. Kind of like we've never done business. We're always just kind of like, what's up? What's going on?
What are you doing?
Party? How you doing? What are you up to? Playing basketball? What are you up to? Like, you know,
networking.
Like-minded people, networking.
Professional networker.
But it's always from a point of like genuineness.
Yep.
Never like, hey, Nick, I need to borrow this. Can you do me a favor? It's always like, what's up? So I've been in touch with this guy, Pat, Valuetainment, for a decade. We actually met in the gym working out at a financial conference.
I didn't know that.
No clue who he was, no clue who I was. I was always the guy, speaking of networking, I was the guy that my company sent out to all the trade shows, financial events. And they would say, just go out and meet people and give out business cards, shake hands, kiss babies. And, you know, when the business comes in, we have a whole underwriting row that can kind of deal with it. I'm like, deal. So I can use my marketing skills and my networking skills that I've always done. Greeting, making people feel warm.
I'm going to need a budget for this.
Exactly. So they pay for everything. So I met Pat working out in the gym. Hey, what's up? You using this machine? No, how about you? And that's how we just formed a friendship. He saw what I was kind of starting to do on social media with a show that I started called Saz Talks Money, where I just went around talking to people about
which
money.
Which was fearless, literally fearless.
Man on the street stuff, talking to everybody.
Microphone, boombox, just in people's thrill.
Rappers, homeless people, college kids, spring breakers, models, just the whole lot of it. Just getting opinions.
Some of it was really funny.
Yeah, so Pat recognized that. And during COVID, prior to COVID, we were already in talks of like, hey, like, this is what we're building. And then during COVID, he's like, what are you up to? I'm like, dude, anything but just sitting around my house.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I moved to Dallas. I teamed up with him. He had never had a podcast. He had done more content, edited type content, how to's, motivational videos.
Did a lot of interviews of others, but not
interviews,
the podcast.
Oh, massive interviews.
Live interviews.
Kobe Bryant and President George Bush and Mafia, Sammy the Bull, like the list goes on and on.
That's right, forgot about that.
I mean, the whole Mafia series and Body Blows, but he's never done a podcast. So when I moved to Dallas to team up, he's like, what are your thoughts about co-hosting the podcast. I was like, buddy, I'm whatever you want from me.
Let's go.
Part of my what I tell people out there is sometimes your best ability is your availability. I just made myself wholeheartedly available to someone I wanted to team up with and learn from and be a mentor to or from. And so I just made myself available. We started the podcast. Now it's one of the biggest podcasts, business podcasts out there. And we have an amazing guest. But much like you, I've always, because of a sports background, I never was a tennis player. I was never a golfer. I was never a swimmer, meaning I was always on a team.
Yeah.
I'm not good as being a solopreneur.
I like being
part of a team.
Yep.
And I'm totally okay with being the number two on this team. Yeah. Especially when the number one
is the number one's Kobe Bryant.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll be Derek Fisher in the corner. I'll be Steve Kerr hitting shots. And MJ, Kobe, like, recognize greatness. So yeah. I'm just happy to be a part of the team. And we've got our shows on Valuetainment and got my own show there. And
I love your show.
Thank you, bro. You were on it recently.
I was on it.
Dropping knowledge.
Yeah.
Dropping knowledge.
I was worried going in there. I was like, where's this going? Where's it?
No, I wasn't setting you up right. No.
Well, you actually hit on something twice, which is worth going back to. Number one, he just said, I was willing to sacrifice it all, sleep in my buddy's makeshift closet / bedroom to make $5,000 a year to chase the vision of an opportunity of my first mentor, we'll call it. And even in your, you know, mid 30s, you were willing to do that again for your current mentor.
Correct.
And, you know, so many people are not willing to just go all in on someone else's vision, number one, or number two, just be willing to sacrifice, even if it's for their own vision. They're just like, they want to have comfortability and the result. And those two things don't go hand in hand.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. I mean, sacrifice, you know how they say, if it was easy, everyone would do it.
That's right.
Shit's not easy. Okay. Like, especially if you're a man out there, like, life's tough. You got to be like, you know, stick to itness, right? And you got to deal with rejection. You got to deal with lows. And yeah, anyone can just go get an easy 9-to-5 job, but then you're sort of like a slave to whoever's paying you and you're expendable. And I learned this when I started at my company in 06, made $5,000. 07, I made my first $100,000, was starting to make serious money. In 08, the world crumbled. And I saw the world fall apart. And when I started the company, I was like the fifth person there. When the company started, we got it up to scaled up to about 50 people. And then 08, 09, when the financial world, we were dealing with
that was one of our crashes.
Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers. These are some of our funders. They're out of business.
Gone.
I'm seeing people that are making $1 million a year selling their cars, selling their assets. But then I learned a lot of the people got fired. You know who didn't get fired? The salespeople.
They always get the lights on when
exactly. So I was like, oh shit. Like, you meaning like I could do this, and even in a horrible economy, I get to keep my job and still make money, not as much as before. But sometimes it's, you know, the peaks and the valleys. As long as you're not, you know, cut, fired, you're done, you stick with it. Yep. And then it took a few years of cutting my teeth, and then it was almost like the light switch went on. It was like, you've seen the movie Forrest Gump.
Of course.
When we were like the only shrimp boat out in the marketplace. We're like, I got all this shrimp now, baby. But it's because I took 2-3 years of eating shit to get all that shrimp.
And the competition was wiped out.
Of course.
You know, one of the things that's so interesting is I talk about sales from the perspective of it's a skill set that everybody must learn, in my opinion. And right now, we're in a day and age of explosion of solopreneurs. And I'll get every solopreneur in the world is like, I don't do sales, I do blank. I'm like, oh, okay, who does your sales? Oh, me. Like, yeah, you're the graphic designer who's also the head of sales.
Yes.
Right? You're selling your service.
If you're a solopreneur, you are
the head of sales.
Yes.
And, you know, there's always a place for someone who can sell. Because of the fact they'll always can generate revenue, right? And somebody with a skill that's not revenue generating is always expendable. So
Correct. Now
your story that we talked a little earlier, your story is different than where I've gone on the other literally 14 episodes. Mm-hmm. And the other 14 episodes, we went to a certain point in time. And that certain point in time is kind of where we stayed and we camped out there. And then we discussed coming out of that. And, you know, when we talked, We talked about more of a, I wouldn't necessarily say scenario, but really one of the largest influences in your life that became the largest driver because of its negative impact, and I'm sure positive as well. So I'd like to kind of go in that, because as you go through your story, it's like you're in and out of the fire relationally, emotionally, and personally with this individual. And most people say, well, I'll just, you know, break up with her. Problem was, it's not something you could break up with when you're raised by them. So talk to us a little bit about what you saw or you know has been the most difficult points in your life that have turned you into who you are today.
So that person that you're referring to was my father. And, you know, my father passed away 3 years ago, and I gave the eulogy at his funeral.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And it was the most cathartic moment of my life, because I went, I mean, born and raised in Miami, all my friends knew my dad. He was the crazy dad, right? Like, all my friends were like, dude, Adam's dad's the crazy guy, right? Because he was. And it was the most cathartic moment of my life. I got everything I needed to get out, and it's just been like, I could finally breathe, just like, you know, every time he would call, every time there would always be an issue. But without making this about me too much, there's always going to be someone in your life.
No, this is about you.
This is about me. I'm just saying, I'm going to relate it to the people, but I'll bring it back to me. There's always going to be haters or challenges in your life. And for that person was my father. So my father's backstory, he was born and raised in Detroit, and he was born with cerebral palsy. He was born with physical incapabilities. His speech, it sounds like he had a stroke. He would kind of had a, you know,
difficulty
moving.
Control.
But he was a very big guy, 6'2", 215 pounds, strong guy. Like, not what you would envision as being a handicapped person. And mentally, sharp as hell. Okay, so I like, picture, this is a second Forrest Gump reference.
Yeah.
If Forrest Gump was smart. When he was young, remember, he had the braces, and they're like, so very sharp, very charismatic, but there were certainly some physical limitations. And growing up in Detroit in the 50s, I mean, it could have been anywhere, but the kids made fun of him. Okay, and you grew up in Michigan. I'm sure this is not exclusive to Michigan or Detroit, but kids made fun of him a lot. And he came home crying one day, as the story goes. And my grandma was like, just, they make fun of you. Just punch him straight in the face. He's a big dude. So he's like, all right. So he's, since then, always been a fighter. To men. I've never seen him touch a woman, my mom, my sister, nothing. But men, he'll punch you straight in the face. So me, growing up, I've always been kind of bombastic, charismatic, you know, shoot the shit. That's just kind of been in my DNA. I don't know what happened. And even as a kid, bang, I'm like, oh, what the hell? I just got punched in the face by my dad. What just happened here, right? So, and I just remember just constantly having these, I don't remember one day in my life where it was like, what a peaceful day I've had at my house. It was
conflicts.
Always a conflict, always. So I was constantly trying to get out of my house. And maybe that's where I developed my networking skills, because I was always sleeping out at friends' house, hollering at girls, just not trying to be home. Because of the conflict. And I actually, and this is ironic, in when I grew up, I was probably in my mid-20s at this point. My best friend was working at the radio station, and they said, we're actually taking applications for why your father should be Father of the Year this Father's Day. And I'm like, yeah, sure, let me, I'll get right on that one, buddy, right? And I sat and I thought about it. I was like, you know what? How can I come up with something?
How old were you?
I was in my mid-20s, 25 years old, probably at that point.
That makes sense.
And we had already gone through peaks and valleys. And I basically had to put myself in my father's shoes to write this. I was like, if I was my father and I was going to write a autobiography of why I'm the father of the year, because if I just wrote it from my first person account, I would have like dismissed it and said, clearly not winning. But then I broke down what my father would have written.
His experience.
His experience, exactly. How he was bullied as a kid, and how he, you know, the odds were all against him, and he moved from Detroit to South Florida and started a business. And he was handicapped but smart, and only hired handicapped individuals and gave them jobs and gave them careers.
Wow, that's cool.
And like, that was his, and he made the newspaper, the Miami Herald, handicapped businessman employs handicapped individuals. And like, I'm like, all right, cool. And I circled back and I honed in on like what mentally and emotionally I think he was dealing with. And it was two complete emotions dealing with his son. And it was a mixture of pride and jealousy, because he was proud that his son was like this, you know, I got a high school scholarship to Miami Country Day, which is one of the most elite private schools in all here in Miami. And I got a athletic scholarship. And I was always one of the best athletes in my little area, North Miami Beach. And he was very hard on me because he knew that I was good, but I could have been this. But I, you know, again, I was always good at
stuff. You liked having fun too.
I liked having fun. So he was very proud of me, but also jealous that he couldn't be that person. And he would always be like, you're never going to be shit. You don't work hard enough. You're a loser. Like, you're never going to amount to nothing. You're going to, you suck. And it was like this mixture of like, he saw the qualities that I had, the greatness that I could have done athletic wise. And he was so goddamn pissed at me that I wasn't tapping into 100% of it. Right. Not that I was a slacker. I got the scholarship. It wasn't like I was some loser, but he wanted me to work harder. And the way that he drove was, you're nothing. You're never going to be anything. I remember in ninth grade before I was in public school my whole life. And then I switched over to the private school in 10th grade. I remember physically dribbling the basketball. This was like in an all-star game in North Miami Beach area. And my father yelling at me that I needed to like do, and I'm yelling at him while dribbling, shut the fuck up, like yelling. We're arguing. A coach has to call a timeout, call my father over. It's like, guys, like, this is insane. So we just constantly, just the arguing and like, my dad was that dad. Like you think of like LeVar Ball and the Ball brothers, right? Like he's a bombastic, but like he talks about my sons are the greatest things ever. Like my father was very like, you're never going to be nothing if you don't listen to me. And for me, speaking of forged by fire, if your father is telling you you're a loser and you're never going to be anything as a boy and your father trying to become a man, that can mess with your head.
It's a lot to overcome.
A lot, dude. And I don't know what it was. And my mom was very loving, but she would be like, dude, I just always told myself, dude, don't listen to him. Just do you, bro. Like, fight through the negativity. Like, it was almost foreshadowing what, you know, the rest of life is going to kind of give you. And I always was just and just deal with it. And then I used that, whether I was doing stand-up comedy, whether I was, getting booed on stage before, because I did stand-up comedy. Yeah. I actually won South Florida's Funniest, won a big contest.
I want to see this.
Yeah, exactly. Deleted content.
We'll come back to that.
Whether it was sports, whether it was my first time in sales, like people hanging up, don't ever call me, click. All right, I guess that's sales. To now being on a massive media channel podcast.
There's nothing you can say in the comments. There's nothing you can say in the sales call that's going to affect me more than what has been said to me 1,000 times.
Of course.
From my own father.
And people, and like this was why I was going to say like, well, I'll tell my story, but I want to kind of bring it back to... There's always going to be haters out there. There's always going to be critics out there. There's always going to be people saying, you're not good. You can't do this, but you need to be forged by fire to basically overcome that to say, you know what? I can do this. I know it's not easy. If it was easy, everyone would do it, but I'm going to move forward with this. I'm going to continue to pursue what I want to do. And sometimes the haters, you know, it's easy to say, just tune out the haters. Sometimes there's a hater, there's a comment that's like, it's actually true. Yeah. Like I probably should, you know, so.
Oh, DM you the answer.
Exactly. So take these comments with a grain of salt and there might be something out there that might resonate with you to say, you know what? I'm not going to change who I am, but maybe I'll change what I say.
At the end of the day, it all boils down to delivery, doesn't it? It's like the people that say certain things and with the right delivery at the right timing and delivery, as opposed to so much of maybe what your father said was the right thing, but the wrong time, middle of the game, screaming at you as you're dribbling up, the wrong tonality, the wrong context, sentence structure, language, but the point may have been great. And that's the difference between gratitude and resentment. you know, it's the delivery and the timing, right? And I've got so many people that I've had poor delivery and poor timing in my growth curve of leadership, specifically in my 20s, that those people, yeah, I'm sure they forgave me, but they'll never follow me again. They respect what I do and the results I get, but they don't respect me as a leader because of how I made them feel, you know, and how I made them feel at certain moments, even if I was dead ass right, you know? And,
Let me speak to that for a second. I've had to, this Patrick but David helped me with this a lot, being logical and rational versus being emotional. And he's constantly saying, being a little emotional right now, buddy, like whatever, especially when it comes to like something I feel strong about.
Yeah.
And that's what we all kind of have to grapple with is like, for a man, we tend to be more logical and rational. Women tend to be more emotional. Now, yes, women can also be rational and logical.
Yep.
Men can also be emotional. But balancing that is really what the challenge is. A little bit, 20%.
Fucking Italian. It's
Jewish people too. It's requirement. My God, neurotic.
Exactly. It's requirement. I could go down a rabbit hole on logic versus emotion and different beliefs on that as well. But I'm gonna stay back here. So are you a different Adam, or how different is the outcome of the Adam today if you have a father who's, you know, the caretaker, you know, dust you off, arm around the shoulder, as opposed to constant kick in the ass and negative reinforcement, right? If you have a positive reinforcement, are you further ahead? Are you exactly where you are today? Or are you not even to where you're at today because of the muscle that was built?
Yeah, I think I want to be clear. I do not like people that play the victim. I don't believe in having a victim mentality. And, you know, there's a lot of people playing the victim out there these days. Yeah. Rich people are bad. This politician doesn't care. It's like, shut up and deal with it. Because I could look at so many more people who had a worse situation than me. And I just have so much gratitude.
Yeah.
And speaking about, that's why I love the name of your podcast, Forged by Fire, is it's like, you gotta go through shit. It makes you who you are.
Yeah.
So my biggest lesson is it is what it is. There's going to be a million people out there that have way worse situations than an abusive father, that are born into poverty or born into a horrible situation or born into the wrong country.
No father.
What have you. Exactly. So the biggest lesson that I can take is, okay, it is what it is. When I have kids, because I want to be in a situation like you with two beautiful kids and an amazing apartment. You know how I feel about your apartment. I love it. I'm just going to be the best possible father I can be. Because I remember telling my father, I'm never going to be like you. I'm never going to be like you. I'm always going to be a better father. Like, I remember these conversations. Slap, whatever, fight, you know.
Wow.
So it is what it is. I'm very grateful with the fact that I'm here 2022 sitting with you. I wouldn't change anything. And so it's you take the shitty things that happen to you, you overcome it, and you improve from there.
So you started with a really interesting part of the story, and it took everything in my power not to dive straight there, which is you went straight to the eulogy.
Mm-hmm.
And I could physically feel energetically, if individuals believe in that, your lightness, because we were talking heavy out there about the topic, and then immediately there was this lightness about you, and then now it's back to heavy. Walk me through what happens, what was the roller coaster of emotions and feelings and conversation leading up to the eulogy. Was your father's death, was it expected? Was it unexpected?
Unexpected.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is the worst.
Yeah. I mean, it came out of nowhere. I mean, he wasn't a healthy guy. I mean, we talked about, so it's not like he didn't have health issues. But you brought up the word roller coaster. I've had there was years of my life I didn't talk to my dad. I'll tell you a story here. I was in 2004. So before I got into finance, before I was doing stand-up comedy, I was doing sports. I was just kind of jack of all trades. I moved to Denver, Colorado, because my best friend, Adrian, became the youngest correspondent for CNN.
That's cool.
He got flown out to moved out to Denver. He was a correspondent here, a reporter here at ABC Miami, Channel 10.
And 25 years old.
He's out of college. That was his job. Okay, like shit. 22, 23. He was great at it. Was recruited by CNN. And why did he move to Denver of all places? To cover the Kobe Bryant story.
The
rape scandal in wherever, Boulder, whatever the hell it was in Colorado. And he moved out there. And he's like, dude, Saz, what do you think about moving out to Denver? I'm like, what the hell?
I love it.
I'm like, yeah, what's up? So I had just, I had no career path. I knew I would do something in sales. I didn't know what it was going to be. I knew that I couldn't just lollygag for years and years on end, but 24 years old, opportunity, bachelor pad, Denver, let's do it. And I was doing three things every single day. Smoking weed and getting high.
Denver's a good spot.
Denver. Writing, because I was doing stand-up comedy, and in the afternoons I was playing a lot of basketball.
Okay.
And I was always a good athlete. I played college football. I kind of played a little bit with the basketball team, but I was more of a football player. I had better stats there. But I would play basketball every day with like very elite competition at this Denver gym. And one day they go, yo, you going tomorrow to try out for the Nuggets? The Denver Nuggets? I'm like, no, what? They're like, yeah, bro, open tryouts, like right down the street. What's up? Like, I'm like, yeah, good luck with that, guys. Like, best of luck to you. And they're like, yeah, well, we're all going, and you know, it's open tryouts. Like, who knows?
This is cool.
So that, I'm like, yeah, I'm actually flying to Las Vegas tomorrow afternoon in the late afternoon flight to see my father for the first time in 2 years. We stopped speaking. We had a whole altercation where we got in a fight, cops were called. I'm like, dude, I'm done with you.
In your
like,
early 20s.
This was senior year of college, junior of college, 21 years old, 21 years old.
Wow.
So we didn't talk for a few years. So maybe I have a year or two off there. I don't know. But
that's all right.
I mean, I literally spent a weekend in jail for domestic abuse because at this point I was fighting back against my father. My father calls the cops. It's a whole charade. I end up in jail. I'm like, the irony here that you've been abusing me my whole life. Now he's never gone to jail. Now I'm in jail for like, so I'm just
that's
like,
intense.
Dude, I'm like, I can't even like deal with this person in my life anymore. It's just negative town. College, I just got him out of my life. At this point, fast forward, it's a couple years later, you know, so, the next morning I wake up, it's like 8 a.m. I don't have a flight till like 4 p.m. My boy's like not even around. All the guys, because he's covering the Kobe thing. All my boys that I typically hang with are playing basketball. They're over at this thing. I'm like, let me go throw on my sneakers and see what the hell this is all about. I'm the last person to sign up for this open tryout. Yeah. Cutoff was 9 a.m. I got there at like 8:59. I'm like, yo, they're like, yeah, grab a number, blah, blah, blah. To condense this story, there's like 500 people trying out. And
they start to do cuts.
Yeah, they start to do cuts every hour. Now, anyone in this room could have made the first cut if you could just dribble a basketball. Boom, they're just weeding out. Like, there's like a guy literally in a wheelchair being like, that made the first cut. So like you could dribble. So they're just weeding out people who are just there for a picture. Cool. So I make the first cut. The second cut is like, can you do a three-man weave? Done. All right. Third cut is like, can you just do basics? Yeah, like if you were a high school basketball player, if you were a high school basketball player, you make the second cut. Now it's gone from 500 people to like 100 people. Now it gets serious. Now they're dividing people up into 5-on-5s, right? And call it like a great day. Call it like God looking down. Call it great teammates. But like I was put on a team that I just excelled because I was a point guard. I've got an amazing shooter over here, a dunker over here, and I'm just running the game. And all five of us make it to the next cut. What's up? Like, we're killing it, right? And a couple hours later, they put the post, like the name and like the final 20 people, I'm on the goddamn list. I'm like, so I call my boy, Adrian, the reporter. I'm like, dude, you're not gonna believe this. I went to the Denver Nuggets NBA Summer League tryout I'm in the final 20. They're dividing the teams up into final 14.
Not going to make the flight.
I'm like, can you get here immediately? Because I don't know what's going to happen, but I got to get to this flight. This has been 3 years in the making.
Pre-Uber.
With my father. Pre-Uber, bro. 04. And I don't know if this name rings a bell, but the GM of the Nuggets at the time was Kiki Vandeweghe.
Of course, yeah. He's played for the
Hall
Knicks.
Of Famer. Yeah. Hall of Famer. And, you know, long story short, I make the final cut. Guys, the last game is in an hour. Take your time, whatever. My boy gets there. I'm like, bro, he's like, what is happening right now? I'm like, I don't know.
How many are in the final cut?
There's 20 people.
Oh, 20, sorry. Okay.
Exactly. And they're going to divide it. Actually, I think it was 16.
Right.
Teams so of eight.
8-on-8, 5-on-5.
And like with and there was going to be a whole big game. Long story short, I go up to Kiki Vandeweghe. I go, hey, look, I randomly showed up here today, okay? I don't expect to make the NBA. That's like, be amazing. But I have to leave. I got to go meet my father. He's like, dude, I'm running an NBA. I don't need your whole saga. I'm like, bottom line is, can I have your business card? Because I would love to get in touch with you about a job when I get back. He's like, sure, great, amazing, cool. So there I am with
you
my-
You just walk boy. Out.
I'm like, I'm out. Like, I'm leaving. So like the final 20 went down to 19, whatever. And I'm with my boy. He's there. He's like, dude, what's up, Nuggets? I'm like, we're driving to the airport.
Wow.
And I meet my dad for the first time in a few years. I see him. We go to Vegas. My luck doesn't continue. I think I lost like $500 playing blackjack, but I got my relationship back with my father. Okay. So then we kind of became buddies. I was like, I don't need a father. I don't need a headache.
Yeah.
Just let's be cool. So we do things like Vegas and what have you. And then the story arc kind of is going good for a while. And then in my early to mid 30s, I basically end up supporting my father.
Okay.
And I end up making money, and like he's living in a trailer park here in South Florida, and he becomes basically a dependent. And that now there's this situation where
full role reversal.
And now I was briefly married, engaged for a second, the girl that I brought to the Visalis event. I told you about that. And I'm like, listen, man, I'll help you out, but like, I got a life that I got to figure out. And he's like, you're ungrateful, son. I've done everything for you. I'm like, you've done nothing for me but fucking beatdowns. Like, so we've had this very contentious relationship that started again. And to make this entire long story short, at the time of his death, we weren't even speaking. And he was leaving me messages. And I'd never blocked my father. I was always, maybe I would not pick up.
Yeah.
I would just not answer voicemail. I was like, dude, the messages were insane. I'm going to fucking tell everybody that you're the worst son. I'm going to tell everybody that you're a fraud and that you're doing illegal. I've done nothing illegal, like nothing wrong. But like now he's like trying to guilt me and shame me to give him more money, even though I'm already giving him money. And I'm like, I got to block this guy. And there was the late summer, right around this time of 2019. And I'm Jewish.
This is recently.
This is 3 years ago. Yeah. And in September, October, that's the high holidays, holy days in Judaism. It's Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
And my father is basically leaving me messages like, on the Jewish holidays, I can't even get in touch with my son, you piece of shit, blah, blah, blah. And he died October 10th. I weren't even speaking. My mom called me and she's like, you sitting down? I'm like, what's up? She's like, your father passed away last night. I was like, oh, damn. Damn.
So they're obviously separated.
Divorced. They've been separated. Right. Exactly. They've been separated since the literally the day my sister graduated high school. Okay. they were waiting for so crying. I'm like, holy crap. Like the guy who's been this influence on my life for good or for bad, like just he's dead. Like, and it took me a couple of days to process it. I pay for the funeral. My sister and I, he didn't have any money. He didn't reserve a plot or anything, whatever it cost, whatever a funeral cost and all that. And I was just basically in the Jewish religion, like you have to bury the dead like immediately, like within 24, 48 hours. There's no like week long. So boom, we're on it. And I was very fucked up and I didn't know what I was going to say, what I was going to do, what I was going to talk about. I have all this resentment, but it's my father. I'm not going to get up on stage and talk shit about my dead father. So being a former stand-up comedian, I said, listen, let me really kind of give the full scope of everything, the life of my father. There, everyone in the audience was crying, laughing, hugging. It was the most like, this is my moment to get everything I've ever dealt with this man for, at that point, 39 years, yeah. Just get it out and never have to like feel resentment or guilt or shame or just sadness. And I just left it all on the table, like left it all on the court, so to speak. And it was the most cathartic, amazing moment of my life. And it's just, and I mean, God bless my father, but I've been like mentally and emotionally free since that moment. So yeah, that's, you asked the...
Well, what's interesting is when we're outside the room talking about your story, I wasn't sure where the moment was, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, I know who the person is.
Yeah.
I know where the fire is.
Yeah.
And the fire keeps following me. But I mean, that's the moment, man. Like that's the moment where you are truly forged, maybe not from, you know, you bankrupted or you lost. I mean, but that's the moment where you're able to, I'm going to guess, forgive, mm-hmm. and move on and feel that lightness. And, you know, I can't imagine what that feels like. And one of the things that always, there's few people in the world of speaking, et cetera, that I have a great admiration for. And I've always been a fan of Tony Robbins. And one of the ones that always links to me is your antagonists are your angels. Mm. And he'll put you through this process where you go deep on everyone who you believe is an antagonist, like the worst antagonist that you've ever had in your life, the one that you want to blame for this and blame for that and blame for this, and that, or you hold resentment for, because people that are a little bit more growth don't blame, but they resent. You resent for this thing, this thing, this thing. And it walks you through this process to put you in their shoes. Like you literally did it when you were explaining it. Go through their shoes, go through their perspective. What were they going through? Yeah. How did they handle it? And can you look through their eyes? Can you look through their pain? And you go through this whole process and he makes you come to the conclusion that your antagonists are indeed your angels. Where you're at today, who you are today, and why you are today is because of those antagonists. And, you know, what if you chose to be grateful for that antagonist as opposed to resent or blame that mm-hmm. antagonist? And you literally just spent 30 minutes walking everyone through what that looks and sounds like. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for letting me speak. I'd very rarely talk about that.
Like, I don't know if we'll ever have something with a similar story like this. And I didn't anticipate where it was going. But thank you for going deep and sharing.
Yeah,
I appreciate you.
Of course. But I think the message that I'm trying to convey is that, like, this thing called life ain't easy, bro. You know, I kind of was making fun of like the chicken dance, but look at your story, Nick, like the ups, the downs, the left, the rights, the money, the relationships, like this ain't easy. But you, like, every morning I wake up and I give gratitude. I say what I'm thankful for. And I'm not a like holistic, spiritual, yeah. religious person. I'm just thankful for life. And I'm thankful I get to wake up and have a body and have a voice and I can talk to friends and love family. And like, there's so much gratitude just to have. If you know, Pat always says, if you can walk, talk, speak, hear, feel, do it, like, just be thankful. Yes, I mean, I had an abusive father. I've had a rough situation. Every year, this, like, speaking of gratitude, every year, my father would make my sister and I volunteer at the Special Olympics, okay? Now, if you've ever been to the Special Olympics, it's like the saddest, most joyful day you'll ever have in your life. You ever been?
I haven't.
Oh, dude. Go, because it makes you be like, oh, I think I've got it tough.
Yeah.
These people are the, like, the most physically, mentally challenged people on the planet. And they're smiling because they get to run a race. And whether they come in first place or fifth place, they're like, I did a race. And here you are being like, I'm going to feel bad for myself. I'm going to throw a pity party.
The elevator's out and I'm going to walk the fucking stairs.
Oh my God. You know,
my Uber's late. I got to walk six blocks.
So like any time that I'm like, oh, I lost a business deal. Oh, I broke up with a girl. Oh, this. It's like, brother, like,
yeah.
I was, every year of my life, I saw the Special Olympics. To this day, what's crazy is now it was like the my father's age type people that used to run it. Now all my best friends are in their late 30s, early 40s are the ones running the Special Olympics here in Miami. So now it's like, it's just, it's such an impactful feeling. But again, back to my, like, the victim mentality, the pity card, there's always someone worse. There's always someone in a worse situation. So, you know, it's so important for me just to have a good attitude. Like, even in my office, like at Valuetainment, they're just like, you weren't here for a few days. The vibe wasn't there. I'm big on vibe and spirit and attitude. And at the very least you can do is have a good attitude. You might not have skill set. You might have not money. You might not have networking, whatever. If you have a good attitude, you know, the rest you can kind of figure out. So I've always been like, even when I was dealing with my father and all the drama, I would walk out the door and be like, all right, I'm going to school. I'm going to make friends. I'm going to meet girls. I'm going to tell jokes. I'm going to do sports. I'm going to have a good attitude. So I never let that, all the negativity, turn me into a negative person.
Was there anyone that pointed that particular word out to you early on? Or did you look back and say, oh, I always had a good attitude? Meaning, you know, you're 9 and you had this third grade teacher who just taught attitude is everything, that just landed. Or was it as you learned more and more about energy and, you know, happiness and joy, you determined it was attitude?
I think it's funny. No one's ever asked me that. Was there a moment? Now that I'm thinking about it, there was one of my still closest friends today. His name is Jeremy. I remember he was like, this is actually really weird. In the mid 90s, this is when the internet first started.
Yeah. Late 90s.
And this was, 96, 97. Yeah. And he was like, he knew computers. And he still makes fun of me to this day because I called him and I go, hey, Jeremy, what's the difference between email and the internet? I was like, I don't even know what, like, that's.
I got my email just in 99.
Exactly. So I didn't know what it was. And on the internet, he was a savvy at this. He wrote the top 10 Macs in Miami. Like, you know what a Mac, like
people.
A Mac, like, daddy,
like a Mac daddy, like a, not like computers, like, but the top 10.
Yeah, no, and exactly, like pimp daddy, like
studs,
whatever it was. I don't remember, I wasn't number one. I don't know what the hell number, but I remember he did this thing and he goes, Adam's on this list because he has charisma. That's his thing. Adam just got, and I was like, I wasn't like, hey, I'm Mr. Charisma. And, you know, number one is because he's like, he looks like Brad Pitt or like whoever the number one was, kid named Jason, whatever, surfer kid. But I made this top 10, this fictitious random top 10 list because I had charisma. And I was like, oh, I like that. Let me lean into that a little bit. If I have that, let me utilize that. So I guess that's the attitude part of the charisma.
Sure. Charismatic leadership is... historically, those are all of the leaders that we still read about, look to, and point to today as the charismatic leaders.
Yeah, so of course.
You definitely have charisma.
Thank you. But that's what you have.
Rapping moments. Hard pivot. Boom.
Boom.
Your passion topic, financial literacy.
Yep.
Give this gang best few minutes of financial literacy of your basics or your advanced, whatever you want to do. Like, hey, this. If you want to not just make millions, but you want to keep millions, what's the best defensive strategy?
Sure. So
let's play some defense.
I learned this because you kind of teed it up at the very beginning. Growing up in Miami, it's not exactly the place where financial literacy and saving money is basically accustomed to.
No, this is not Omaha, Nebraska. You know,
exactly. Being in the nightlife, especially in my early 20s, when this was my career, partying and nightlife and all that, I saw the popping of the bottles. And how much did you spend this weekend? Yeah, I spent $3,000. This weekend, you spent $3,000. Oh, how much is a table at the club? $5,000. I said, what? Okay, so I've been there, done that. All right, great. When I got into the financial world, I told you I made no money. And then I started to make some money. And then 2008 crumbled. And then I started to make some real money. And I became a millionaire by age 35. Okay, cool. At 35, I found myself what I call chilling, right? So chilling is basically when you own your time.
Yeah.
Nobody tells you, you have to be at work. You know, you have to be here. You can kind of come and go as you please. I mean, obviously everyone's got accountable to something. But chilling is when you own your time. And I found myself being chilling, right? So what I did was I started a show on social media, Soz Talks Money, just to teach millennials about how to save that money and understanding money better. And basically to break down money in a language that we can all kind of relate to. Not like the typical, you know, old man in a suit talking about your 401k and investment strategy. Like, be like, what's up? What do I got to know about money? Kind of a thing. And I started by interviewing just all the financial people at all these financial conferences that I go to. And basically, hey, give me your best piece of advice for millennials. And being that I'm, you know, in the financial world and I did stand-up comedy and I've got this charisma, I'm like, yeah, fucking, let's go for it.
You take a boring topic, make it interesting.
Exactly.
Funny.
So I'm like, don't say anything boring, buddy, right? So, and it always just, the most typical answer, the most common answer, 90% of the time, these massive financial advisors were just like, yeah, save that money. Like, you're going to need it. Your life is long. Like, don't spend it all. Great, cool, got it. And then as I did all these interviews, I realized there was just basically six constant themes, which I call the six principles of wealth, that just keep coming up. Whether it's whoever I talk to, any interview, it's these six things. And number one is you got to have a game plan for your money. So a lot of people call that a budget, or some people call that cash flow. But you got to understand what's coming in and what's going out. Two-thirds of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. Two-thirds of Americans don't do a monthly budget. Correlation? I think so.
Probably.
So, you know, the one thing I say is, like, the only thing worse than doing a budget every month is not doing a budget every month. So number one, just having a game plan for your money, whether that's written, whether that's an app, whatever, understanding that. Number two, all right, like, before you can win the money game, don't lose. What's losing? Right? Debt, credit card debt, car loans, college loans. I know Biden just wiped out 10, 20 grand from everybody. So, like, you just got a life raft, buddy. But, like, losing the interest rate game, you know, your money going the wrong way. And there's different levels of debt. There's debt, there's bad debt, there's horrible debt.
Skewed debt.
Right? There's, you know, good debt if you can turn that into an investment.
Yep.
But debt inherently is bad. It's negative interest rates. Yep. So just understanding that dynamic. All right. All right. Now that you've done that, okay, now you can win the game. Let's save that money. And you can look at the stats. You know, 50% of Americans don't have $500 for an emergency fund, right? 50% of Americans don't have, 80% of Americans don't have $1,000 to their name. Like meaning
insane.
There's a different, like, so I tell people save $10,000 before you try to do anything else. Before you try to become a Bitcoin millionaire and try to become a realtor or real estate expert, just understand what it's like to have 10 grand in the bank. Now, some people will be like, 10 grand? Like, fuck it, I've got 100 grand. I got a million. What are you talking about? Some people are going to be like, dude, I've got like $500. So, you know, I think 15% of America makes 100 grand or more.
Okay.
So 8.5 out of 10 people are not making 100 grand. So the majority of people don't have this kind of money. Get to a point where, like, you have a cushion or an emergency fund or a rainy day fund. Get to that. That resonated to me when I read a book called The Bogleheads Guide to Investing by Jack Bogle, who's the creator of Vanguard, which is one of the biggest investment funds, index funds in the world. And this is where this is principle number four, is invest that money and have your money grow over time. Investing basically comes down to two principles, basically time and compound interest, not time in the market, but time in the market. So I get ready to read this book.
Not I'm timing, like, but
exactly,
time in.
Time in the market. You know, that's why I say I'm not a day trader, I'm a decade trader. I like my money to grow over time. So everyone who's lost a bunch of money in crypto kind of gets it now. But 2 years ago, they didn't want to hear, 6 months ago, they didn't want to hear about saving. I was like, so I read this book by Jack Bogle, and it's essentially, I'll paraphrase, he's like, you guys ready to invest? In the book, I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And like the next sentence is like, I can't hear you. You ready to invest? I'm like, fuck yeah, I bought an investing book. Like, what's up? Like, you know, raise your hand if you're ready to invest. I'm like, I'm all in. He goes, yeah, before you can invest, you got to do these three things. And they're essentially the three things I just laid out. Like, have a plan for your money. Like, get the hell out of high interest debt. And actually have a decent amount of money saved up before you start investing.
Then you can invest.
Then you can invest. Because saving is short term. That's your bills. Investing is long-term. So I'm an advocate of just like a decent foundation, having a retirement plan, having a 401k, having a Roth IRA, having index funds, like traditional stuff that has built wealth for generations. Whether you, if you're in real estate, God bless you. I don't own any property. I like to kind of keep it flexible, but I own REITs, which are real estate investment trusts. So I'm not going to not, you know, I'm not going to dismiss real estate as a vehicle for success and appreciation. I just don't want to fix plumbing. That's just not my thing. So, all right. So invest. So those are the four things that you need to understand when it comes to actual money, right? Have a game plan. Don't lose. Start to win. Have your money grow. After that, there's only six. There's only six things. I got five. I got two more. Number five is you got to protect your money, right? Like in the old days, in the medieval times, what was around the castle? A moat. Okay. Like they're like, holy shit.
Guards, a moat.
Everything's in the castle.
Yeah.
Let's put up a drawbridge and a moat and some guards. God forbid a ravaging horde wants to come in and kill us all. Let's have protection, AKA these days, that's known as insurance. So what are the types of insurance that you should definitely have? Health insurance, life insurance. God forbid if you've got a family, kids, something happens. And disability insurance. What happens if you can't work? So many people have car insurance. Yeah. Or like cell phone insurance. These are all replaceable items.
I just heard about pet insurance.
Yeah, pet insurance. But like you can't replace your own health. You can't, like what happens if you can't work? So I say protect your health, you know, health as well. So understanding that. And that leads me back to principle number six, which is chilling. Chilling is the modern day retirement. Like Nick became chilling in his mid 20s. Okay, you could have retired or what? You could be retired right now, right? But you know, retirement is a thing that is typically you're 65, yeah. You're on a rocking chair, but like anyone who's wealthy, when I ask them what they do with their free time, they don't sit around and do nothing. So everyone I say, if you were chilling, you had millions in the bank, you're good. What would you do with your free time? Everyone has the same three answers. Everyone, a special fourth will say a fourth answer. Special people, everyone wants to travel. Who the hell doesn't want to travel and see the world? Respect. Everyone wants to pursue a passion, whether that's podcasting, whether that's playing the piano, whether that's stand-up comedy, whether that's photography, like something you would do for free. You're passionate about it. Number three is you want to donate your time. Yeah. Like you want to give back.
Contribution. Yep.
The contribution. You want to contribute to society, whether that's educating young entrepreneurs, whether that's going to the Special Olympics, whether that's helping homeless people, whatever. You have a heart. You have compassion. And then the last piece is leaving a legacy, whether that's a family, whether that's a charitable foundation that you have, whether that's, you know, building some sort of amazing company that'll be there forever, whatever, it's leaving a legacy. And to kind of sum this up is that I tell people, you don't need to enroll in an MBA. You don't need to take 50 different business classes, read 100 different books. Be good at these six things and you'll be chilling. The problem is most people are one out of six or two out of six. And my goal in my financial literacy component of what I do is just to get people, if you're two out of six, let's get you to three out of six, buddy. If you're four out of six, let's get you to five out of six. And if you're that special few that is five out of six, let's figure out what your chilling is. And that's where I help people.
My man, cool. Tell everyone where they can find you.
So yeah.
We're going to throw it up there.
Yeah,
we'll
of course. Anything you put in valuetainment into YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, anything social media. My company's Valuetainment. It's my little pin right here, lion logo. We're out there. One of the biggest. We've got millions and millions of subscribers across all our platforms. So subscribe to Valuetainment. And if you want to follow me and everything that I talk about, you can follow me on all socials at SOS Talks Money, SOS Talks Money. I talk life. I've talked dating. I talk relationships. But I also talk money, especially with Nick. So SOS Talks Money and at Valuetainment.
He's a great host on all of his shows that he does. Very funny and also tons of wisdom, lots of education, always something to learn, challenges people. So tune into everything that he does.
Can I give you a quick shout out?
Let's go.
I said, what's your chilling? What's your legacy? What's your claim to fame, success? I'll never forget this. And you said this at the end of the show, you go, fucking burning desire to just succeed, dude. You have that in you. So everything you do, I know is going to.
Well, I don't want to be a historian. I've said this story, you know, I've been successful and, you know, we watched the company kind of run its course and I don't want to be a historian still telling that story. So on another journey, on another run, and hopefully we can put some more points on the board. So episode 15, Forged by Fire. If you liked it, you want to support the cause, go to www.valuetainment.com. thenextgen.org. We got a foundation, teaches youth entrepreneurship. We got the Rook Sarnicola Center for Entrepreneurship in Muskegon Community College. We're moving all the programs to an LMS online to teach, to really get past the red tape of schools and colleges to be able to teach anybody anywhere through an online learning management system. So go there, donate $25, donate $50, put that money to good use so that we can, impact the next generation of entrepreneurs, and you can write that off. You can tax deduct it.
Ooh.
Yes. And he talks about that in his classes. Thank you guys so much. Episode 15.